and welcome to the T2 Hubcast with me, Bernice Cassilly.
And me, Tracy Roberts.
Hi, Tracy.
Hi, second time lucky. Yes. We've had the giggles, haven't we?
Yeah, this is the thing sometimes with us. We get into this room and whether it be podcasting, filming videos for the T2 Hub, I don't know what it
is.
Yeah, we just get into a giggle. Yeah, we can stand in front of a big audience and group of people and chat all day long.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
But yeah, we just get a bit chatty sometimes. So Tracy, we've been having a few chats recently and we've kind of thought, actually, let's get into the podcast room and actually record a podcast. So can you explain why we're here today?
We're here to maybe give our listeners a bit of food for thought around talent. That sounds quite interesting.
It does sound quite interesting.
And so, we've had loads of chats about it, haven't we, with customers most recently.
Yes. And why is it important?
Because I think talent management overall can be, I'm going to use the expression misunderstood, maybe.
Okay.
I think that people's approach to talent is all very different. I think that often in organisations we either have nothing in place for talent management or we kind of feel that it's maybe at the bottom of a big pile of stuff that we're kind of working on, if you like, or we have a talent programme or a talent initiative, if you like, but we're maybe not as finely tuned into what we're going to do with that talent initiative. And sometimes actually organisations have got really great ideas about it, but it's just the mechanisms behind it that maybe they just need to, you know, do some work to, I guess, maybe get better outputs, really. So I thought what we would do today is maybe talk about it as a generalistic conversation piece, as in what we've been kind of finding, maybe common traps within talent management programs, considerations, and maybe just that conversation around high value roles as well, because I think sometimes there's a direct crossover somewhere.
Yeah.
But sometimes that message becomes a little bit misconstrued as well. So because we've been having so many conversations like this around how we do this within organisations, and we're doing a lot of consulting on this at the moment, I thought, let's just get it out there, because it'd be good for the listeners to think about actually in their organisation. So if there's someone who is in a talent management programme or initiative, how does it look, feel, what are they getting from it? And hopefully they've got some golden nuggets in there. They go, well, we're doing that and we're doing it really, really well. For those people who are kind of heading up those initiatives or thinking about heading up those initiatives, what can we give them today as considerations to set off on the right foot with it, or to go in and just tweak it a bit to make sure that it suits them well? So you've come from commercial kind of settings. Have you seen this done well?
At times.
You were being very careful there, weren't you? Yeah. Likewise, by the way. Yeah, likewise.
I think the challenge at times is when you work for a really big organisation, it can be, I mean, I worked for a huge, ginormous organisation. We had 20,000 employees plus. Yeah, I suppose it probably wasn't kind of as to where it needed to be. Yeah. But then I've worked for much smaller organisations and I've seen kind of it in almost, you can then break that down. You find in some organisations, department by department, it's a completely different thing.
I think you're right. Yeah.
And I think sometimes as well, there's not that, there isn't kind of specific clarity in regards to who's managing the talent management.
Great point.
I've seen it before where you end up with the people kind of in the function, in the department, trying to map out all of that and create a framework, and then HR are trying to do it at the same time, and there's no communication or crossover. So it just ends up being a big old mess.
Yeah, and it's, I think part of that problem is, what are we classing as talent? I think that's the first question, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because for me, that's where we get a little bit of crossover again is, and this is going to be probably a big debate that we start off in some organisations when they listen to this podcast, it's, what is your talent? What does it look like? Mm. And sometimes when we go into organisations, they've got very, very different systems in place that tell you what their talent looks like. Of course, there's problems with each of those things, you know, so this, let's just mention one that's really obvious, 9-box grid.
Yeah.
Okay. So we know that if this is used really well, this can be a fantastic tool, but there's a few problems with those tools. So I've written a few down. Subjectivity.
Okay. Yeah.
Can always be an issue. Bias, conscious or unconscious. Let's just call that out. You know, if we're seeing people from different perspectives through different lenses. We also know that they're heading in a similar direction to us. They've got a similar approach to us. You know, does that affect our judgment sometimes? I think it does. I think I put down limited perspective or context. So sometimes when we're giving input about an individual, we're only seeing it from, you know, one particular angle.
Yeah.
And actually, if we put them into a different setting or a different context, would we have seen them differently in terms of their performance and their attributes and skills? Because we know they're different.
And I think you only see what you see. And especially if you think about kind of the way that a lot of organizations are running at the moment, we've got hybrid working, we've got remote working. So sometimes it's a case of what you see from that employee is only the outputs.
Yeah, you're right.
You don't see their skills and attributes and all of the things that they're doing kind of on the day to day. So how can you truly assess some of the things that you're trying to assess?
And also, how close are you to those individuals? I'm just going to say it, you know, if we've got a lot going on in our organization and, you know, we're the person above them that makes that decision, do we see everything that's going on? Sometimes it's not our fault. Sometimes, you know, the business requirements, the draw from the other stakeholders, etc., means that we don't see the devil in the details sometimes. Or, coming to another point, we've actually neglected their development needs because we've not necessarily, as you say, saw the opportunity and thought, right, let's actually push them a little bit out of their boundaries here, or let's actually support them by giving them something to work on. That one thing I think would be really great as a marginal gain, as an example. So I think if we're not seeing it and then it comes to assessment and we've neglected that, that is sort of our fault, because 50% of that kind of agreement between us and them is going to be us giving them some opportunity or giving them some tools or whatever it might take. If they don't choose not to take it, then that's different. But then we score them low on something on our talent grid or our scoring system, whatever it might be. And then actually, is that because we didn't actually provide the opportunity or we didn't provide the support? Comparisons, I think this is a big one. So if we're looking around an organization, and it does lean into a little bit of the stuff that we've spoken about previously around quiet quitting, etc., which you brought up a great point about that this morning. If you're looking around the organization, there's certain behaviors or there's certain ways of working, and one person doesn't fall into that category and do it exactly the same way. You know, if we've got a whole team of people that do it this way, but their work-life balance feels different, as an example, and we think, great, we're getting great outputs, but this one person sits slightly outside of that and does it slightly differently, and you maybe think, oh, they don't seem to work as hard as that other person. They probably do, or it's their way of doing things.
Yeah.
And we can't compare, you know, apples and pears. That's not what it's like. The other thing is that some people have more experience, more tenure, they've fallen into good habits, bad habits, whatever it might be. So those comparative things can steer our decision making when we're scoring them or putting them somewhere on a grid as well. And then the last thing is stereotyping. It's certain roles, it's certain personalities within roles, it's certain attributes that people bring to a role, and we kind of make assumptions, and straight away we might say, oh, that person would never do this, or would never do that, or they wouldn't enjoy this, or for that type of role, you know, you'd expect someone just to sit in that role for a long time and do those things that they're really good at. They're not going to be interested in doing that because the last person who did this, and we'd like to think that in this day and age, we don't think like that. But unfortunately, we get patterns in organizations, and that does happen.
It does.
The other thing that I was thinking about when I was thinking about tools and scoring systems was how aligned we are as a leadership team. So we see this a lot, don't we? So let's give a great example. If you've got a leader within the higher leadership part of the organization, and they're having a big discussion around, you know, these particular people that are just below them, someone who's got high levels of perfectionism within them is probably going to score a little bit less, even if that person is epic. If they don't see that they really, really exceed their expectations, they're going to score them a 3 instead of a 4. Sorry, Bernice's chair's just fallen down. That's really funny.
Just squeaked.
And then if you've got someone who's, you know, eternally optimistic, as an example, and they really are humanistically built and they're looking for the good in people, then they will score highly based on, you know, potential, maybe, because they'll see that. And then as a whole, you know, the discrepancy between those sort of places on the grid or the way they see things is always going to be different. So for me, one of the questions I would ask the listeners now is, in your organization, how do we avoid those things? How do we, you know, consider the bias, the subjectivity, you know, the balance of the scoring, our lens, if you like, as a company? And are we balancing up our opinions of skills, attributes and behaviors rather than just that role, so to speak? Because for me, there's a distinct difference between those three things. And I would invite organizations to maybe consider that.
And what would you say is the difference between those three things?
Well, I think skills are innate, aren't they? You know, some people just have it, and you can look at it. And certainly in organizations where you build up a level of professionalism within a certain subject matter expertise, if you like, and you've got it, you know, and it's inbuilt. And of course you can improve and you can get better, etc. With attributes, this is something that, you know, most people have within them, but it depends on the situation they're brought into. You'll either have a slightly lower attribute level in certain things or a higher level of attribute.
Yes.
But the difference between those two things is that most of the time attributes can be honed a little bit. And actually, if we bring awareness to it, then actually we can start to increase our levels. And then before you know it, you've got a whole system that you didn't know that person had, or you might have had an inkling.
Yeah.
But the only way you're going to do that is to try and figure them out and maybe hone. Put some challenges in place. Think about how you can bring them out. Behaviors is the biggest thing for me. You know, you can have someone who's got high skills, high attributes, but the reality is, do they fit your culture? Are they spreading your message in a positive way? Do they want to be there? Is there a psychological contract? That's one of the sort of parts that I would add to the equation. Is it high? You know, do they really want to be there, and are they fully invested in your company? And unfortunately, unless we listen to people and ask the questions and really do the maths on roles and characteristics, et cetera, we're probably guessing that.
Yeah. I think sometimes when it comes to that psychological contract, and yeah, it might be that we're trying to guess that, but sometimes I think you can see it as well. But that's the thing, you can do kind of all of this fantastic work on mapping your talent, mapping that future talent, and assessing kind of what you have right now and what you need going forward. But if you've got disengaged people, then that's another piece of work that you've got to do.
Yeah, and that's the point is, are we considering all those variables? Loved what you said there, because for me, it's when it comes to talent, I think the one thing that we do is we look at what we've got at the moment, and we sometimes, so some businesses have gone in with the best intentions. They've gone, let's look at who we've got and let's look at who's doing well.
Yes.
And who we want to develop. Yes, and then we have maybe got some of that kind of neglect going on, or stereotyping, comparisons. And then we just assume those people over there don't want developing. And what we see a lot here when we're dealing with cohorts and exec coaching is actually, going back to a previous podcast, some people are actually quite happy in the roles.
Yeah.
They don't necessarily want to increase in terms of their responsibility levels, but they might want some extra responsibility side to side.
Yes.
Or we're making assumptions, aren't we, about those people, so we just leave them out.
Have you actually had a conversation with them to find out what they want?
Yeah, so that brought me on to what I said, which was focusing on the future. So with our talent, what value creation have we got within our organization? So rather than just thinking of the here and now, it's like, actually, we're going to have to consider two things. Do we revisit this often enough to make it like valid? And I'll explain what I mean by that in a minute. But also, where is the business going right now? You know, what is our short and long-term goals, and what's our BHAG? Because once we know what our BHAG is, we can look at our talent and go, right, we need to shape our talent programming or talent support or whatever you want to name it, so to speak, towards those things. And rather than just being a generalistic approach where we have, you know, two groups of people coming through, some that are individuals that have put their hand up and said, I want to be a leader or I want to be developed. And other people are like, oh, I might. Or the manager's gone, you've been here a long time, go in that group and learn more about the business.
Yes.
Or go in that group. We need to be a little bit more specific. And I think the other thing is we're looking at things as the talent's there, and we've also got high value or high risk roles or unique roles. And we try and grid them separately sometimes. But the way we need to approach this is, well, it's a game all the time. That's the way I see it.
Okay.
So I try and refer to it as a football game.
Right.
Okay. So it's, you've got a team, right? You've got all your players. Some have got high skills, high attributes. Some are on the bench. Some are bloody injured, let's be honest. Okay. Would a football manager always go into a game with the same formation? Probably not.
Mm-hmm.
Would they always look at their players in a similar light? When they're going into certain games, what does the opposition look like? Who are their key strikers? What league are they in? That's a big question.
Yeah.
And all those things come into consideration. It's absolutely no different when it comes to talent. You know? So if you're going to look at development, high value, whatever way you want to approach it, your game is always moving. Okay. What does your competition look like? You know, who's on the bench right now? Who's a striker? What approach is needed to deal with this particular situation? What formation is right? And I think if you're visiting your talent often enough, you keep this kind of manager's kind of theory going, then actually your talent mapping looks different every single time.
Yeah.
So if you've got, I don't know, a productivity problem and actually there's a stoppage because of the supply chain for, and you're really struggling to keep up with things, then of course the high value people at that particular moment are those people that are moving that quickly. If you've got a sales issue, your salespeople hit that, you know, top calling of like high value critical roles, if you like. But, you know, other times they're not there. It's someone else in the business. So I would argue that you can map this out, but you've got to do it regularly because it will shift depending on the game that you're in.
And when you say we need to do it often, we need to be regular with it, kind of what would your recommendation be? How often should people be doing that?
That's a really great question. And I think it will tie in with things like your PDR periods, etc. But for me, if I was fortunate enough to have a talent team, I'd probably be focusing on at least once a quarter, just having a look at, you know, in line with our forecast, where we are, how we're likely to end the year, where we're going next year. Our vision, our values, our behaviors, all those things. I think they all play a role in it. And then also looking at all the things. So like the valuable skills element as well is really important. So looking at your revenue and your sales, your stakeholder relations, your cost and efficiency, your organizational capability, which is what I was saying there about productivity, etc. Finances, reputation and risk management even comes in there, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And innovation and development, which sits alongside processes. Now, for me, all those things play a part in who's high value, who's high risk, what kind of roles are going to be harder to fill if that person leaves. And of course, that then leans into your succession planning, doesn't it? And how you approach that. And a lot of organizations think they've got that in place, but do you think they actually have?
No, not always.
How do you think that works?
I think sometimes it's a case of when it comes to succession planning and talent mapping, I think people do it at the right time in the year, when it comes to like the, I don't know, 6-monthly, half year, whatever it might be. But the challenge is sometimes that they might do it, or it's such a long process to even complete it. By the time it's actually completed, we've got all of the data and all of the results, and we then go through and actually review it.
Yeah.
It's all changed. People have left, people have joined, people have moved around. And so it actually, I've seen that happen where it's taken months to get around the whole organization to complete that one task of having a full kind of 9-box grid. And then it was then followed up by succession planning. But it wasn't beneficial because it had all changed by the time we'd actually completed the job.
Yeah.
So this is where it needs to be regular. It needs to be often as well. And sometimes I think it can be overwhelming to people within an organization whose responsibility it is to do that, to think, oh my goodness, we've got 1,000 employees to get through. We've got 10,000 employees to get through. Whatever that number is, start off small, really think about, right, target. Okay, going forward at the moment, so retention, for example, kind of where are we seeing the biggest issues? Where are we spending the most in regards to recruitment, bringing people in? Where are we losing people? Which part of the business is underperforming at the moment? Going forward, the skills that we really need for the future, or the behaviors, the attributes that we need going forward for the next 6 months, 12 months, 3-5 years time, what is it that we need going forward? Let's focus on that first.
Aim for it.
Yeah, rather than trying to do it full scale, full organization across the business.
Yeah.
It can be quite overwhelming. It either doesn't happen or it happens, but it's really long, dragged out process. Start off small. What's your focus area?
And that brings...
Pilot it. Test it out first. See how it goes.
Yeah. And I think you're right, because then just coming back to what I was going to say, you know, sometimes we're looking for the right people, the right roles, the right experience, the right skills, all those things.
Yeah.
But the reality is we can only target certain pockets to really make an impact. So sometimes I work with an organization that says, right, we've got a talent program. And I go, okay, what does it look like? And sometimes we're part of that, which we're really happy about, because we love to do, you know, a bit of us, a bit of the other organizational elements. It works best if you do it that way. However, then what we'll say to those organizations is, what are you going to do with them when they come off this program? And of course, we can still chip in there, because we can still send updates, and there's future CPD training, whatever it might be. But the reality is, there has to be a plan for those people when they finish.
Yeah.
So the two sort of types you get everyone chucked in together, a talent program, and you say, right, how do you quantify that? So how did you decide that person should be on that program? And in organizations, quite often, that's where another discrepancy is. Sometimes it's been based on their scoring.
Yes.
You know, so they go, right, anyone who scores, let's just say for argument's sake, above a four, between 1 to 5, they're considered. The other people, it's like they're championed. So their leaders say they should be on the talent program. And then my challenge back is, okay, give me a reason why. Mm. And quite often, I'm going to be honest, it's linked to tenure. It's linked to the fact that they can't give them a promotion at this time. So they just want to give them something. And the reality is we've got to be able to, I don't know, transpose what they're going to learn in those situations and say, this is what it's going to bring you. This is what it's going to bring us. Going back to me and James's podcast around leadership and the middle management, if you like, quite often we make an assumption if we put people on this trainer, they're going to want to do something with it. Sometimes that's not the case. So you've got two, yeah. You've got two groups. That's the way I see it. You've got evolving and targeted. So you're evolving or you're emerging, if you like. There are people we're pulling a little bit initially.
Mm-hmm.
We're going, come with us. Let's show you a little bit about yourself first, a bit of self-understanding. Here's some opportunities to learn. If you want to reach in and grab this, then great. And then once we observe them doing a little bit of their own work and all those things, then we go, now we've understand what your skills, attributes, behavior is, and of course where your role sits. That's an investment piece. If we're pulling at someone and it's not really working, then the reality is it us because we've not given them something to grab and we're putting it all on them? Or is it because actually they've realized mid-flow, do you know what? Actually, I'm fairly happy where I am. I'd like to develop in the role I'm in.
The next T2 Leadership Retreat will take place on the 7th to the 9th of May, 2024. To book your place on the Ultimate Leadership Development Experience from the People Performance People, or for more information, please visit www.trans2performance.com.
The other side is targeted. Now, I call it targeted rather than existing because some people call it existing talent. I would argue it has to be targeted because if you were going to target those people, it's because they're there for a specific reason. Mm. So as an example, in one organization working with right now, they're looking at the first layer down in terms of succession planning. So every single leader has had to go in and say, right, if I was to go tomorrow, who's going to step up? Okay. One particular organization I was working with had two people out of about 50 that they went, right, they're ready, right? Mm-hmm. Which was a bit, when they actually realized that in the room, when we mapped it properly, they were like, wow, that's pretty bad. But the reality is if we're going one layer down at least, we've got something in place. And if someone's at 70-80%, if someone went, then could they jump in and make up the deficit?
Yes.
Probably. But we call them the push. So we're going to have them in a group where we go, right, we're going to, now that we've, decided that they're the right people, what do we give them? How do we push them out of their comfort zone a little bit? What knowledge can we impart on them? Can we actually run alongside them and pace set them a little bit sometimes? And actually, can we follow up on anything we do with them? And this is my bugbear. It's like we can slap any course on anybody.
Yeah,
we've got to bring it to life in the real life scenario. So when we're in our training rooms or when we're out with people, we will try as much to bring that to life. As you know, we're storytellers, right? And we can share experiences from different sectors. But until they go back in the organization and someone picks that up as their mentor, their coach, whatever their setup might be, we're not pushing people.
Yeah.
Not really. No. Pushing people on a course is one thing. Pushing people moving forward is what's going to make the difference. And here's the thing also, some people in that push group, at some point you realize maybe aren't still right for that job. We might get the skills, but the characteristics are not there, or vice versa. We've got to be brave and say, just because they've got the skills there doesn't mean that they're right for that role in the future. And then we've got these other things in the equation, which is we've got hard to fill roles. Okay. We've got unique skills in certain roles. That then brings in a different dimension, doesn't it? Because we think to ourselves, okay, if we've got a hard to fill role, it would be vacant for longer if someone leaves.
Yeah.
Higher cost associated, it can be a reflection of shortage of supply. May take time to develop adequate performance. So then when we've got someone in the business, we might flog a dead horse because we think, God, if we went out to, and then the unique skills bit, you know, this is people that you've got in your business that if you went, you wouldn't be able to get a like for like. They might need nurturing. You usually need a bit of investment. You've probably already invested in them, so there's a little bit of a concern there. You might find actually that the only person they'd go to was your complete competitor. Yes. Because it'd be a bit of a like for like, and yeah. that's a problem. So those things are in the equation. I think those two things sometimes make us make the decisions we make. That kind of affects how we, I guess, well, put that essential push towards getting that person into that role. It's not necessarily all the other characteristics, it's just those two things. Mm. So we've got to take that out of our judgment as well a little bit. But it is something to consider. Mm. And there are a couple of matrices and things that you can use to help you as well as your 9-box grid. One that we were looking at this morning was the Leapak and Snell model. Yeah. And that is looking at uniqueness and value of skills alongside what you already know about the individual. So if you're interested, guys, maybe take a quick look at that. We might do a little bit more work on that moving forward. But what we thought we would do is think about maybe some key things that you can think about in terms of just that first initial thoughts about talent programming, right? Mm-hmm. So we've got 5. Do you fancy sharing the first one?
Yes. So the very first one then is to take a holistic approach to assessment.
Okay.
So taking a holistic approach to assessment then. So we've already kind of slightly discussed around assessment and how we'd assess it, but how would you describe, how do we do it holistically, I suppose?
Yeah. I guess it is all those things. It's taking the subjectivity, the bias, the perspective, your lens, comparison, stereotyping, all those things, and then aligning with your leadership team. Like,
yes.
What does good actually look like?
Yes.
You know, let's agree on it. Let's, you know, if it takes training for us first, that's what we need to do.
Yes.
And then we need to take that alongside our risk, as in high value, high risk, considerations about specific roles, all those things, and look at it from the top down. Mm. So we make sure we're all, you know, scoring on the same sheet, if you like, but also taking everything into the equation, particularly what we need for the business and how do we create future value.
Yeah, I think that's something that's, it's critical, I think, that you have to do that. It needs to be completely aligned, because otherwise it can be such a nightmare. And also, absolutely. As well, what's the point in spending all of that time doing that if we're not aligned on what we need, what we want, and what does good look like? I think that's something that sometimes gets a little bit missed because we get so caught up on actually, right, okay, we need this for the future, or we need this right now, this is our gap right now. But actually, what does good look like? And actually, what's the, if we get that, what will the outcome be? Because is that what we need?
Yeah.
And that sometimes gets missed. Good. So first essential thing then was to take a holistic approach to assessment. So the second thing that we're exploring then is to focus on development and growth. So tell us about that.
So it's not just about identifying high performers. We've just said that. Mm. It's actually about nurturing and fostering growth, spotting skills, attributes, characteristics in people, giving them healthy challenge, thinking about how we've got opportunities for skills development to see possible opportunities in other people. You know, don't assume.
Yes.
Makes an ass of you, makes an ass of me. That's what we say.
It does.
And part of that is also having conversations with people. You know,
so
do you want to develop?
Yeah.
You know, and if you don't, why not? Because if it's because they're happy, then let's think about side-to-side movement, you know, and opportunities we can give them to make their jobs better or their earning potential better, whatever it might be. But it's about us always focusing on development and growth from their perspective, but also the organization's perspective.
Yes.
So if we see there's a shift and all of a sudden our key kind of BHAG's changing, big, huge ass goal, by the way, if you don't know what that is, then how are we focusing our attention a little bit more towards that? So conversations with people, conversations with the leadership, and then how we make that aligned to make sure we're creating opportunities.
Yeah, I think it's really important. And again, sometimes it doesn't happen enough, or those career conversations, however you want to describe it, it only typically happens when the performance framework tells us it's supposed to happen.
Yeah.
But you make a really good point there as well, that it needs to be not only what that person and that employee wants and what their dreams, but it needs to align to the business goals as well.
Yeah,
of course. So good. So number two then was to focus on development and growth. So the third one that we're exploring is diversity and inclusion.
Well, we've got to put it in there, haven't we?
Definitely.
We've got to put it in there.
Why?
Well, it's a key conversation. That's another podcast. But yeah, so what we've put down here is ensure our talent management practices are inclusive and unbiased. Mm. If you've got an EDI representative in your organisation, they'll help you do that. You know, we don't want to fall into groupthink. We don't want to, you know, miss any opportunities that we can. But considering individuals from various backgrounds, experiences and perspectives, because this doesn't only just create creativity and problem solving, but also creates a more inclusive workplace culture. And just overall, that the fruits of what we get from that are just massive, aren't they? So I think when it comes to DEI elements, it's our lens and their lens. You know, what can we do to make this? And it's not just about backgrounds, experiences and perspectives. It's different parts of the business. It's just creating that kind of, you know, just because you work in accounts, who's to say you can't work in marketing? You know,
exactly,
if you work in on the factory floor and you want to change tack, what are we doing about that? You know, what can we do to create those experiences? So I think there's a whole big holistic view on that one as well.
Yes.
But for me, that is something that we don't unlock enough. Mm-hmm. So it's something that we really need to think about.
Good. So moving on to the fourth essential consideration then, clear communication and expectations.
Oh, God, if communication was great in every single organisation, we wouldn't have work, would we?
So we wouldn't. Actually,
as we've been saying today, so transparency in what you're talking about when it comes to you know, whether or not you've got an evolving or a targeted program going on, what the expectations are of people, what their career paths could look like, what their opportunities could look like.
Yeah.
You can only have that through discussion, a two-way discussion, not a one-way, which is what we tend to do with our little tick box exercise. Definitely. Clarity that sets the stage for effective performance, but also empowers employees to take ownership of their own growth. So for me, going back to that push-pull is like, where are people in their careers? You know, are we pushing or pulling? But are we doing our fair share as an organization too? But then when we do see things change, a little bit like tug of war, all of a sudden someone starts pulling back at us, we think, oh, okay, we've definitely got someone here who really, really wants to move forward in the organization, do something different, whatever it might be. Let's make sure that they understand the opportunities, what's in front of them, and actually maybe allow them time to ask us questions as well. Because I think quite often we give them a heap of stuff and leave. And actually, if we just give them a little bit of time to be more curious about certain things, they can find things out for themselves and actually do something about it. So, Nice. Yeah.
Good. And then, so finally, the fifth essential consideration then, when it comes to mastering talent, is adaptability and flexibility.
Yes. So, as we've just said, it's ongoing. It's not a one size fits all. Let's just, fill a cohort full of evolving and existing leaders. Let's think about, actually, what game are we playing today?
Yeah.
You know, how will that change our vision of what talent looks like? How are we still aligned on our scoring system? Because let's be honest, we've got to make sure we calibrate sometimes. It's, you know, it's a big thing. We can fall into bad habits. We've got to adapt. We've got to think about all those things we were discussing there, high value, you know, critical, specialist, all those different types of roles, but look at them from a different perspective based on the business requirements. But we've got to stay agile in our approach. And sometimes a good way to do that is to keep revisiting our talent strategy.
Yes.
But also then aligning it with things like our PDR periods or when we relaunch our new value system or whatever it might be. And remember that it's not a one size fits all program that you can leave. Just leave it in the corner to if you're lucky enough to have a talent team.
Yes.
Then brilliant. They can take control of that. But the talent team needs to work really closely with the leadership team that support that. And that's the other thing. If you have a talent program, does everyone on that leadership forum, so to speak, know who's going through that process? And are they open to becoming a coach, a mentor, an advocate, a supporter, whatever you want to, like, if they know that and they're actively taking part, they can't at any point say, well, you know, they didn't achieve this goal, or we gave them these tools and they didn't use them, you know. Part of our responsibility as a leader is a little bit of that, is to lean in from time to time and offer our support. And I think that means every leader. It doesn't mean just the one specific leader over here in accounts where they've got someone on that program. It's someone across the room in a meeting that thinks, ah, okay, well, I'm going to work with them on a project. I'm going to dig a bit deeper. I'm going to offer them my support, whatever it might be. And I think that kind of falls into that as well. So we've got to really tailor our approach, but make sure it's always, always a fluid thing that we're doing. We can't just put people into grids and think that the magic's going to happen. And just because someone's reached a pivotal point in their career where, you know, they've been there a long time, they've got high tenure, they've got high skill, are the characteristics still right for the business? Mm. Does it line up? Are we putting a little bit more emphasis on high value, high risk roles rather than actually looking at this from a more holistic perspective?
Yeah.
And yeah, we've got to align what we offer. It even affects the way we advertise our roles, doesn't it?
Yes.
And the approach we take on those things. And people are smart now. They're looking for things like that. When they come into your organization, they will have a view. They will have a presumed psychological contract with the job that they're about to do and the business that they're about to go into. And that does change. And it has shifted generationally, hasn't it?
I think as well, the expectations of, I don't know, even just looking at a job advert these days, it focuses on kind of the overall responsibilities. But I mean, just thinking about every job that you've ever had, and this is a question to everyone who's listening as well. If you can really think back, the job that you're in currently, does that 100% align to what was advertised as well? Because quite often that doesn't happen. But some organisations, instead, what they're moving to now is actually kind of more skills-based, just in the recruitment process, because they know that that's actually what's needed rather than a bullet point list of responsibilities and a bit of fluff around how great the organisation is.
Absolutely. So maybe just the way we sift people as well, the way we interview, the way we advertise, got to be rethought.
It's the full employee journey, isn't it?
Yeah. And they will ask about development. You know, a lot of, well, the smart people will. It does look different for each person. You know, some of it is around our gaps analysis. So for instance, if we're working with our targeted talent group as an example, of course we're working towards at some point filling a gap, but we've got to think about how specific that journey can be for that person. So they might do some generic stuff, but then we need to give them specific stuff. So it comes down to targeted development and even things like interview preparation experience. So if they're going to step up to the next level, so I know some people have gone through that interview for that next role 4 times, not officially, but unofficially, so that they can really kind of go through the process of prepping, understanding the gaps and all those things. Where when you've got evolving talent going through, of course, you're going to give them an element of understand yourself first and then think about how you can be selected in the future and then, you know, lead the journey that way. And that then takes them onto a development program. So consider both those things. 5 top tips there that will hopefully get them thinking in the right way. We're probably going to revisit some of this stuff in a little bit more detail, aren't we, to help people maybe figure out how to effectively use a 9-box grid as an example.
Yes, because there's so many different things to explore when it comes to talent planning, talent mapping, whatever you want to kind of however you want to describe it. So I suppose just to kind of close off the podcast, if we just very quickly kind of recap what those 5 essential considerations were. So number 1 was take a holistic approach to assessment. Focus on development and growth. So it isn't just about identifying who your high performers are. Yeah. It's about actually continuing to nurture those potential the potential growth. Diversity and inclusion as well. So make sure it's inclusive, that we're bias-free as well. Clear communication and expectations, really important. Adaptability and flexibility. We've covered a lot there, Tracy.
What match are we playing?
Sorry?
What game are we playing?
And if you were to give just 1 piece of advice to listeners around kind of how to manage and handle all of this, what would that be?
I'd say step back.
Yep.
Look at where your organization is going, what your BHAG is, what the short-term limitations and obviously performance-related stuff is that's in the equation there. And really take stock of how you're approaching this. You know, are you in a position where you have got what you would class as succession planning in the business? Do you have something that's encouraging people to step up and say, hey, I actually want to be, you know, developed? And I think the other side of it is just before you even get into kind of categorizing where people go in mapping journeys, it's like, are you creating the right conversations? And if you're creating the right conversations and those, you know, performance development chats or, you know, any review process that you've got in place are efficient, you're already kind of sifting in some regards where people might go on the journey, that's the first place to start. If you haven't got that right, you're making assumptions, and assumptions are not very healthy for organizations. So step back is my advice. Take a holistic view to everything that you do in regard to this. It might be something as scary as, where is your succession planning right now? And if you can answer, it's not there, and actually, if these people left, we'd be in big trouble, then that's the first place to start. But equally, what is critical or high value roles right now for you? And that will change constantly. So think about what that looks like.
Yes, really important. Good advice. Yeah. Thanks very much, Tracy.
No worries. So
as Tracy mentioned, it might be that we pop back at some point to explore this, because there's so much to explore. But yes, as Tracy is just kind of one little piece of advice to get you started, take a moment to really step back and look at everything. So that's our session for today. So thank you very much, Tracy. And we'll see you again soon for another T2 Hubcast.
See you guys.
Are you a fan of our podcast? If so, make sure you're following us on all of our social media channels. You can find us on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter by searching Trans2 Performance. By following us, you'll have access to exclusive content, special announcements, and more. Join the T2 community today.